So I will start with some introduction, why it's important. Most of the points here have been already discussed by Almudena. Then I will discuss some aspects of neutrino matter interactions, and then I will move to some, in particularly the jetized proton rich. The only possibility we have is to have in the NuP process, where it is a one of the few nucleosynthesis processes where it is fully catalyzed by neutrinos. So neutrino interactions play a very important role, and I will discuss why that is the case. And if this is so, there could be also very important, a strong impact from collective neutrino oscillations. I would like also to point out about that, and finally I will summarize. So most of the discussion in the previous session have been focused on the impact of neutrinos on the explosion, but also, independent of the explosion mechanism, we know that at least quite a substantial range of supernova explosion will leave behind a neutron star that will cool emitting neutrinos. And we know that this is the case just from the detection of neutrinos from, in supernova 87A, that the time scale for this cooling of the proto-neutron star of the several 10 of seconds and the total luminosity of neutrinos is consistent with the binding energy of the neutron star. So this is basically independent of the explosion mechanism of the supernova. We also know by basic physics arguments that we expect a kind of hierarchy on the neutrino energies, where we expect that the neutrino, electron neutrinos are emitted closer to the surface, and antineutrinos deeper inside, and finally mu and tau neutrinos and antineutrinos deeper inside. And this will mean that the energies of these objects are larger than this one and this one. And then I will later discuss why that is the case. So neutrino spectral luminosities are important, as Almudena already pointed out, from the nucleosynthesis in neutrino-driven wind, in particular both for the NuP process and possibility of having an arc process there. However, one should not forget that there are other many aspects why we need to have reliable estimates for these luminosities. First, we have neutrino nucleosynthesis, which is ongoing in the outer layers of the stars and contribute to the production of some key isotopes like boron-11, fluorine-19, nitrogen-15, lanthanum-138, and thallium-180. And this is mainly produced by neutral current spallation reactions and charged current neutrino absorptions in the oxygen, neon, carbon, and helium layers of the stars. Finally, there is also a very interesting possibility suggested recently by Huston and Chen, where there could be an arc process occurring in the helium layers at low metallicities, in stars of low metallicity. This is, in principle, very sensitive to the details of the neutrino spectra, but it's also a very interesting possibility and requires also good knowledge of the luminosities and spectra. Finally, neutrino oscillations are also very sensitive to the initial luminosities, and here we can have a whole range of possible oscillations, which are collective MSW oscillations and finally vacuum oscillations. And in particular, these oscillations will affect the underlying nucleosynthesis in all these layers. And finally, for neutrino detection in Earth, where we have also to consider all the effects. So, in fact, the very interest on neutrino-driven winds came already from the work on Guzli and collaborators based on the work of Wilson that showed that in the conditions are, in fact, suitable, you can have a very nice reproduction of the arc process abundance. And in particular, the important thing at that moment was that they were obtaining a continuous decrease of YE as a function of time where the matter was getting more and more neutron-rich and in also high entropies. The issue of the high entropies was immediately put under question because basically almost at the same time, Takahashi, Witte, and Janka, based in the very same models, could not reproduce the high entropies. However, they still were getting this increasing Y. So now, as I will discuss later, this is not the case anymore in any of the current simulations. And in particular, why is Y important? Y is intricately related to the neutrino spectra and luminosities. And in particular, why is determined mainly by these processes, which is a neutrino absorption in neutrons and antineutrino absorptions in protons. So, in particular, supernova models predict that the energy of these antineutrinos is slightly larger than the energy of the neutrinos. So, but however, this is not the only energy scale in the problem. The other energy scale in the problem is the neutron to proton mass difference. And it turned out that in order to have proton-rich jet that you need to have energy difference smaller than 4 times the neutron to mass difference, or in order to have neutron-rich, you have to have energy difference larger than this, 5.2 MeV. So the most, I will say, sophisticated simulations, these two-dimensional simulations of Thomas Janka for a 15 solar mass object, predicts that at early times, the luminosities are really the difference between neutrino energies and antineutrino energies is very small, around 2.5. So the ejecta is proton-rich. The question happens, what happens at late times? Can become neutron-rich as predicted by Wilson, or and have an arc process or not? So here, in this slide, I have tried to make a list of the relevant neutrino-matter interactions, and I have classified this list in kind of the first three or four bullets are reactions that basically every supernova group includes, but not necessarily at the same degree of sophistication. So here you have charged current processes, and these are, as I mentioned before, neutrino absorptions in neutrons and antineutrino absorptions in protons, and the same in nuclei. And here there is still some groups that basically use the Bruen prescription, but other groups have improved, particularly with weak magnetics as described by Horovitz, and also include the latest electron capture arrays that myself, Karl-Heinz Langacke, and the last compilation, including around 3,000 nuclei, had been published by Judah Gatsby and collaborators in 2010. So then we have elastic processes in both neutrons and nuclei, and again here there have been improvements due to weak magnetics and also by ion-ion correlations. Finally, we have also inelastic processes and pair processes, where Bremsstrahlung has been a very important addition since 1998. So now here I list processes which are either not included or only included in some simulations of some groups. And this includes purely leptonic scattering between neutrinos, neutrino-antineutrino pair annihilation to go to other neutrino channels, inelastic scattering of neutrinos and nuclei, and this is something that at least the Garkin group currently includes with rays that we provided to them. Almudena has already pointed out that the outer layers of the proton-neutron star light nuclei could be important, but these channels, these reactions, are not included by anybody. Unfortunately, not all of them have been computed. In particular, scattering in deuterium has been computed by Nakamura and collaborators using effective field theory techniques for solar neutrinos for the detection in snow. There is also calculations by O'Connor and collaborators for neutral current scattering. And in this paper, we include some RPA calculations for antineutrino absorptions on tritium, but there is no interaction for helium-3 interactions for any of the for both charge current processes. There is the issue of inelastic neutrino scattering, which is not, to my knowledge, included in any of the codes. And finally, I put here one that I think is not included in any one. It is probably not relevant, which is antineutrino absorption in nuclei, because whenever you have positrons, you don't have nuclei. But so far, I think nobody really is included. So Almudena has already shown these plots. One of the advantages we have now is it is possible to do long-time one-dimensional simulation based in Boltzmann neutrino transport for oxygen, neon, magnesium cores, and this all just explodes in one-dimensional. So then one can follow all the whole evolution during the explosion and the long-time cooling. And this has been done both by the Basel group and by the Garkin group. An important aspect is when both groups use the same microphysics, this basically in Basel group use the Bruen prescription of rays plus the addition of Bremsstrahlung, they agree. In fact, the agreement does not seem so good, but you have to be careful because the time scale here goes to 25 seconds and here is only till 7 seconds. However, in a Garkin group has also an improved version where basically they include weak magnetic correction and also an elastic neutrino scattering in nuclei and neutrino-neutrino scattering and annihilation. And there you see some important changes in the luminosity, in the average energies. And in particular, they see a much closer energies between neutrino, electron antineutrino, and nu, mu, and tau. They are basically indistinguishable over the whole computational. But the important point is that all the simulations show that the luminosities and energies become identical at late times. And this is something I would like to discuss why is the case. And in that, I will be based on a detailed analysis we have performed of these models, because this is something that it is consistent and, in my opinion, does not depend on the details of the rects. So the point I want to do also is that with these neutrino energies and luminosities, the jetta is always proton-rich during the whole time of the cooling of the proton-neutron star. So a variation of this figure has been already shown by Almudena, and this is, I would like to discuss, this is a figure that comes from the work of Rafael and collaborators that have done a lot of work understanding how the neutrino spectra forms. And here one can, first let me consider nu mu and nu tau were supposed to be simple. In there, you have that nu mu and tau are in thermal equilibrium with matter by inelastic processes mediated by the neutral current, because there is no charge current interaction, because typically you don't have enough energy to produce a muon of a tau. So this, they are in equilibrium till a given energy, and then scattering processes still can occur, so they diffuse out by random work till finally they decouple from the atmosphere of the proton-neutron star. The situation for electron, neutrino, and antineutrino seems to be simple, because it is assumed that they are in equilibrium by charge current process with neutrons or protons till basically the free stream. And in the following, I want to assume that it is probably an oversimplifying picture, because this picture is true from the early cooling of the proton-neutron star, but as the neutron star cools, these objects evolve to this, and this is why they become identical. Because at the very end, you also have a domination of this diffusion by scattering with nuclei that determines the final decoupling. So this is seen in this figure where we have done a detailed analysis based on the Boltzmann transport runs from Basel, and here, in addition to having the full consistent evolution of the neutron star, we have also the full information about the neutrino distribution function concerning energy and angular distribution. So we can do a detailed analysis of the main contributions to the neutrino opacities or inverse mean free path. And this is shown for electron neutrino and electron antineutrino as a function of the radius in the star. And these bars correspond to the neutrino spheres defined like the moment the optical depth becomes two-thirds. And just to mention how important is this to have the detailed neutrino information, for example, if you look in Bremsstrahlung, which is here, you see a very different contribution from neutrinos and antineutrinos. And it has to do because from Bremsstrahlung you need to interaction of a pair of neutrino-antineutrino. For antineutrinos, it's very likely that you find a neutrino because there are many neutrinos present in the deep interior of the star. So Bremsstrahlung have a large contribution. But for neutrinos, you need to find an antineutrino, and there are very few antineutrinos deep in the interior of the star. So Bremsstrahlung is superb to high densities and high radius simply because there are no antineutrinos. But you see that according to the picture of Rafael, in a neutrino absorption in nuclei, this red line, it is the dominating process for electron neutrino. However, for antineutrinos, it is not the case, and the dominating process is just inelastic scattering in nucleus, because they are the dominating in the composition. So neutrinos, basically, antineutrinos from the very beginning are relatively close to the picture of mu and tau. So this is why in the simulation they become closer to the mu and tau. And in the improved microphysics, what you do is to suppress even more neutrino absorption by weak magnetic correction. So that brings it even closer. And this is why they are closer. And when you go to 7 seconds, what has happened is the neutron star has contracted and the neutrino sphere has moved to high density regions. And then the situation has changed dramatically, because now absorption processes are completely suppressed. And this is suppressed by two different reasons for neutrinos and antineutrinos. For antineutrinos, they are suppressed because you produce a neutron. And this neutron is degenerate, so it is Pauli block the final state, and they suppress this channel. And in fact, what happens is that the dominating channels here now, inelastic channels, become Bremsstrahlung and inelastic scattering on neutrinos, on electrons, which again, they are the same that for new mu's and new tau's. And here, the situation is again that you become suppressed for electron neutrinos, because now you produce an electron, and you are talking a very degenerate matter, and again, you have Pauli blocking from this electron, and you start to suppress. And this will be even stronger as you evolve with time. So this is the main reason why both spectra becomes the same, because simply they are getting suppress all the charge current channel, and at the end, elastic channels are the main contributions to the opacities. IS is isoenergetic scattering. This is the notation of the supernova commutativity. This is elastic scattering in nuclear. So, as Almudena has already mentioned about proton-rich ejecta, and what happens if you have proton-rich ejecta is that you can have a strong production of many nuclei above A equals 64 by the new P process. So I will go a little bit fast on that. In the new P process, basically what you have is matter that it is ejected, and as it cools down, it forms heavier and heavier nuclei. And typically, the formation of heavy nuclei occurs at distances of several hundreds of kilometers. At this moment, there is basically N equals N nuclei and protons, and now you want to have proton catchers on germanium-64, which is the heaviest nuclei produced. You cannot do it simply because this nucleus is unbound, and this mass has been recently measured in Lanzhou in China, confirming that it is really unbound. And this nucleus, beta decay of this nucleus is too long for the time scale of nucleosynthesis in supernova. However, if you put antineutrinos, the situation changes because they are immediately absorbed by the free protons producing neutrons, which are absorbed in this neutron-deficient nuclei by NP reactions producing a decay rate of the order of 10 milliseconds, and then the flow of proton catchers can continue to heavier and heavier nuclei. And if this is in the case, you can produce heavier and heavier nuclei, where basically the flow goes by NP reactions, you go above by neutron catchers and beta decays till you reach the next alpha nuclei, and then the flow stops and you keep continuing. And in this way, you can produce interesting contribution to this light P nuclei that are not thought to be produced in any other process, at least in the sufficient amount. So this I will skip. So now we have discussed that matter is produced in the new P process, or the nucleosynthesis in the new P process occurs by antineutrino absorption in protons at distances of typically 500 kilometers from the proton-neutron star. But this is precisely the distance scale in which collective oscillations are expected to occur. So typically all models predict that collective oscillations will occur between 10 kilometers and 500 kilometers, and after that the spectra is frozen, and you see. So now if collective neutrino oscillations occur, they will have an impact on the nucleosynthesis. And here I show results of several results. These results from Froglia collaborators are consistent, for example, with the ones of yesterday by O'Connor, where you assume that the electron neutrino flash is much larger than the new X flash, then you have only oscillations if you have inverted hierarchy. However, if you consider a scenario where the spectra scale is the other way around, though, where new X is larger than the new E, the situation occurs that in normal hierarchy you can have oscillations, and in particularly spectral split. In particularly for antineutrinos, which is more interested for nucleosynthesis, you see that they can get the high energy tail of the anti-new X, or anti-new mu and tau, and consequently increase the absorption rate in protons. So we have done a very schematical model just of this spectral split, where we have simply assumed that they artificially occur on sun energy. And this is the spectra we have assumed for neutrino, electron neutrino, and anti-electron antineutrino, and antineutrino mu and tau. And the spectra, we have not simply assumed. We have taken from this reference. They were predicted by the simulations of Buras et al. That correspond to the new P-process nucleosynthesis we have used before. So now, depending on where this spectra split occurs, you can have a larger or smaller enhancement on the absorption on protons. And the interesting thing is that basically the enhancement is independent of where the split energy is. It's always around 1.4. So this is very interesting because if you have oscillations, you are not sensitive where it occurs, where the split occurs. And this is also why we did not took the effort to perform a full oscillation calculations. Nevertheless, we are currently working with John Chen in doing a full multi-angle analysis and see what comes out. So now when one does that, you have here this comparison between a calculation where no oscillations are assumed in solid points with a calculation where oscillations are assumed. Basically, you increase the absorption rate by a factor 1.4, and you see a strong enhancement on the productions of heavy nuclei, particularly in the case where no oscillations for this particular model were considered, you did not produce substantial amounts of palladium and cadmium that some people consider also LiPi nuclei, but when oscillations are included, you really co-produce also palladium and cadmium. And here you see also that basically what happens is that for some nuclei you have a decrease, basically for all alpha nuclei that adds like waiting point, and for the heavier nuclei and this flow, this reduction of matter for these light ones are moved to these heavier ones and produces this strong enhancement. So now, just let me conclude, and based on current simulations, neutrino-driven winds produce proton-rich ejecta that constitute for the site of new P process. The new P process can explain the solar abundance of LiPi nuclei, including molybdenum-92-94, ruthenium-96-98, and maybe higher in some cases where the conditions are particularly favorable. Collective neutrino oscillations can have a strong impact in the nucleosynthesis, but of course that depends on the particular set of luminosities and energies that one assumes for all the neutrinos. And finally, I would like to say concerning the microphysics that the dominating opacity channel at late times for all neutrino and antineutrino species becomes elastic scatterings on nucleons, resulting in very similar spectra. And by the base, I hope that I have convinced you that this excludes neutron-rich ejecta at late times. It may be that at early times, neutron-rich ejecta are possible, and this is something that the Garkin group sees in multi-D simulations where they observe the ballistic ejecta of some matter who has not been subject to a strong neutrino flux, and consequently, the YE was not changed. Okay, thanks for your attention, and I stop here.
Yeah. Neutrino energy seems to be different to what the Hüdepohl paper at I concluded. They attribute the similarities in the mean energies to recoil effects, so not isoenergetic scattering.
What do you mean by recoil effect? You mean the inclusion of recoil effect?
Yes.
But
isoenergetic.
You are probably right. Let me. So in going from this model, which is the one which is basically identical to the Basel group, to this model, they include recoil effects in addition to other effects. And this may explain why they anti mu e and nu mu nu tau become identical of all the times. But my point with elastic scattering is why all neutrinos become identical at late times. That cannot be due to recoil. And in particular, this is seen in every model, in particular in these two models that do not include recoil corrections.
I have a question. Since you're not the first group to consider the effect of collective oscillations on nucleosynthesis, could you summarize the results that other groups have found, so in particular Alex Friedland? In what sense Does that agree with you or disagree with your results?
Okay, so let me make clear that we have not done any calculation of collective oscillation. We do this schematical model, we assume that occur, and try to make the impact on the nucleosynthesis and the absorption. So now, to answer your question, here there are two kinds of groups. There are groups that try to look and understand from different point of views how this collective neutrino oscillations phenomena occurs. This is a relatively complicated set of differential equations, and some people have to make an analogy with gyroscopes and basic physics and precession in magnetic fields to try to understand. So, but most of these groups simply assume a set of neutrino energies and luminosities and look what is the outcome on oscillations. There have been other groups, and particularly, I think so far, in nucleosynthesis in print, there is a work from Gail McLaughlin where she assumes that large enough energy differences between neutrinos and antineutrinos to produce very neutron-rich conditions to produce the whole R-process nuclei, basically conditions like the ones of Wilson. And on that, they did a collective nucleosynthesis study and show that what collective oscillations does is to reduce the neutron to seed ratio because you increase YE and then you have a strong alpha effect because you reduce you increase also the rate of neutrino absorption in neutrons and you reduce the production of heavy nuclei. However, there the situation is that none of the simulations predict are neutron-rich conditions. So we went the other way around and say, let's consider these proton-rich conditions and see what is the imprint. And there you also see an imprint. So it depends on your initial conditions, what will be the result of collective oscillations.
Right, but so you took a spectrum from Boras et al. That was relatively early in the postbonds phase, right? So if you looked at a spectrum from Hudepohl at a later time, then when you're actually at a time frame where you're actually at a time where you have the nucleosynthesis occurring, how does that change your result?
So, okay, we took this Boras et al. Spectrum because it's the same simulation for which we took the trajectories for the nucleosynthesis. So, in principle, it's consistent with the nucleosynthesis we are considering. So now, concerning the Hudepohl et al., there have been studies of looking if you can have a new P process in these simulations. And the conclusion is that you cannot. And it has nothing to do with the fact that the matter is not enough proton-rich, because it is more than enough. The problem is that these oxygen neon magnesium stars, they have basically no envelope. So you have a wind blowing in the vacuum. So there is no reverse shock effect, as Almudena mentioned. So the expansion is so fast that there is basically no interaction with antineutrinos to produce. You really need that your wind is slowed down by the reverse shock and then have long time enough to be subject to antineutrino interactions to produce substantial amount of heavy nuclei. So in this oxygen neon magnesium, I do not expect to have a new P process occur by this argument.
Thank you. Then are there more discussion points? If not, I'll just hijack this and ask another question. In your introduction, you talked about a paper by Banerjee at where they talk about our process and the helium layer. Yes. Could you elaborate on this?
Okay, so this is a relatively old idea that has been going back and forth, and the idea is there that as neutrinos go out, they will reach the helium layer, they will interact with helium.